The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, I'm cognizant that it's my last Monday night talk for the year, and it did occur to me that I should have a very inspiring talk that's seasonally appropriate, but I'm not. I want to start with a story. In Zen masters in Japan, I have a reputation, a good Zen master knows a few different skills. One of them is calligraphy, and the other is maybe writing little wise poems or haikus or something. And a somewhat arrogant, wealthy person came to a Zen master with beautiful rice paper, very expensive paper, and very expensive ink, and asked the Zen master, who was famous for calligraphy, to please write the essence of Buddhism, the most important teachings of Buddhism, on this paper. So that, you know, the core teaching. So the Zen master, you know, grunted in wise ways and, okay, assented, and took the paper and laid it out on the table, got all prepared, got very focused, attentive, and, you know, it was, you know, a pregnant moment of silence, and certainly this would be good. And so the Zen master wrote a word on the paper and handed the paper to the wealthy person, and the word was attention. And the guest said, "No, but I meant, you know, the most important teachings of Buddhism. There must be something more important than this. Something that really encapsulates all of Buddhism." And the Zen master said, "Okay." Took the paper back and wrote another word. Attention. Not another word. The same word. And the person said again, but you don't understand. I'm important. I have important people are going to come and see my calligraphy on the wall. You're a great Zen master. It has to be really kind of the essence of what Buddhism's all about." and so the Zen master said, oh, I see. Okay, now I get it. And wrote, "Attention, attention, attention." So attention is important, and that's what I want to talk about today. Is what I want to talk about are different facets of attention. The word attention I'm using here as an umbrella term for a variety of different attentional factors that we have. And learning about the different ways, different aspects of attention, different ways that we use the attention, can help us be wiser in the kind of attention we use at different times, the ways in which we engage it and have it operate. And so attention is not just one single thing. And nowadays, mindfulness is very popular across the land. And if you read books on mindfulness or go to different workshops, I think there's many different definitions of mindfulness that probably represent the fact that attention is not a singular thing. But different factors come together to form different kinds of attention. And to know what these different kinds are, or different facets, helps us to be more skillful as we go through our life, and certainly in meditation. But a talk about different facets of attention might be hard to pay attention to. Might be kind of boring. So kind of to emphasize how important attention is, attention or awareness, this ability to pay attentive to what's happening in the present moment. The awareness that we can use for attention is this amazing, very thin little bridge between the vastness of the universe beyond us and the vastness of the universe within. We, in a sense, sit at the seat of attention, and we could almost equally look outward and we could look inward. And this little sliver of ability to be conscious of this world is just a miracle that it should happen. Most of us are so busy being aware that it's very seldom we notice that we're aware. We're so interested in what we're aware of. You know, we have all our preoccupations and fantasies and important things to do and get and websites to visit. And so we're very engaged in being aware. And if someone asks you, are you aware? You say, of course. But we're often kind of so preoccupied in what we're paying attention to, and that could be our inner landscape, our thoughts and feelings, that the very fact that we're aware kind of goes unnoticed. It's like not that important, or it's kind of incidental, or it's taken for granted. Whereas the ability to be aware might be our most precious resource. It might be one of the most amazing tools that it's possible, one of the most amazing capacities that organic life has evolved in this human, in this universe that we live in. Who knows if anybody has the kind of awarenesses at different forms of attention as we have. Certainly the other beings have attention, but the different kinds and the abilities we have, and to sit with this kind of introspection and outerspection, this ability to, and that bridge, just sit right at that amazing little interface. Consciousness puts us at the interface between the inner world and the outer world. It's just an amazing place. And so in talking about these different facets of awareness, my goal is to try to evoke in you curiosity and interest in your own capacity to be aware and attentive, so that you start noticing it more and pay attention to it more and start feeling its texture or its different facets or its value, and it comes alive for you in such a way that you're looking like you're standing on the rim of the Grand Canyon looking down. You're just like, wow. You're looking down a billion years at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. This car is amazing. Or, you know, looking at, you know, the mountains in the Sierras. Or, remember when I was a kid, and that hasn't happened ever since. I've tried looking for it, but when I was about, I don't know how old I was, maybe 8 or 9 years old, my parents took me to the Sequoia National Park. But on the way there, we went off kind of to some little vista point that overlooked the Central Valley. And I remembered I was just so stunned at looking out across the Central Valley of California, the vast vista. It was like spectacular. Could it be that you're being aware, the capacity to be aware, to kind of view or sense or perceive your own capacity to be aware, is that amazing? It's like just an astounding thing. It might seem for me to say that there are people who don't really haven't developed their capacity of awareness might seem kind of foreign and bizarre. But if you meditate and you get deep into meditation, the what stands out in the highlight is this capacity to be aware that becomes more and more important. So much at some points that it doesn't really matter what you're aware of. It's almost incidental. It's just so awesome that you're aware. Wow. I mean, this is like the best thing going. And it's like a miracle. It's beautiful. It's joy producing. It's freedom producing. It's like this is where, it's like being in wide open skies or wide open prairie or wide open freeway or something. You know, it's just like, wow, you know, it's just so cool. And if that's not, and if for some reason it's not seen as being cool and wonderful, you know, you're not like, wow. If you have a sense of getting into that kind of pristine, clear awareness, and you're kind of centered there and calm and joyful there, just here with it, the alternatives are a drag. You can really feel how we get back into our preoccupations and concerns and our stresses of our life and get wrapped in, and our attention gets wrapped up in our desires and aversions and our fears and our conceits and our all the different kind of machinations of our mind. We can feel how stressful and contracted and it's not so good. Even if awareness is neutral, it's better than sometimes an alternative. I don't know if that was a nice thing to say. So, you find in the teachings of the Buddha, and this is also quite amazing, 2,500 years ago, they had these, you know, all these different words or concepts for understanding what was going on in the mind. And what's the different apparatus, the different factors of attention, the attentional apparatus, the elements of attention. So one of the, where I'll begin is with something called yoniso manasikara. It's usually translated into English as either as wise attention or wise consideration. And this is the ability to be paying attention enough to what's happening in the present moment with yourself, to be able to consider, understand what is healthy for you to do and what is unhealthy, what is skillful and what is unskillful. And so to be caught up in thoughts and ideas and intentions of hostility towards anyone, including oneself, is not a skillful and healthy thing to do. To be involved in feelings of love and compassion is a skillful thing to do. To be so clear about this, to see this, can make a huge difference. And that's where the yoniso manasikara comes in. Once we see that distinction, for example, if we don't see it, what often happens if we go through life without really paying attention, there might be strong feelings of hostility and resentment and complaining and annoyance and all kinds of things going on. And it's kind of like business as usual, and we have important things to do, and so we're not really paying attention to it. But if we're not really seeing it, then awareness, our attention, is still feeding it. But if we can step back and clearly see, my mind is involved in hostility. Is that where I want my attention to go? Is that where my attention should go and feed and develop? The Buddha says, whatever you do frequently becomes the inclination of the mind. So if you constantly think thoughts of hostility, of aversion, of complaints and judgments, that becomes more the patterns that get reinforced in the mind. And the strength of that reinforcement has a lot to do with the attention that goes into it. So we have the ability to give unintentional attention to mental activity. Yoniso manasikara, this wise attention, is we generate attention that focuses on what is skillful. We redirect attention in a way that's skillful, helpful, healthy. So if I wake up to the fact that I'm spending a lot of time having thoughts of hostility, and my attention to that is really clear, I'm going to say to myself, that's not where I want my spend my precious human life doing is having those thoughts. I would rather have my attention be used in a different way. And so to generate this attention, intentional attention, make a choice. And I use the word generate intentionally because the word yoniso can also, yoni can mean a womb. It's the place that gives birth, that creates, the creative place. So there's something about giving a creative movement, give birth to a certain kind of attention that's focused on what's useful. And one of the things that's useful is to have an attention that, if there is hostility, to have attention that sees it directly, like you look it right in the eye, but I'm not going along with you. I'm going to look at you and be there, but I'm not going to keep feeding this. Or it could be that we move the attention to something else. In the modern mindfulness movement, one of the most common features of the definition of mindfulness is that it's purposeful. And in the Buddha as well, this manisikara, kara means to make or to do or to generate. And so to generate, to make a mind, an attention, or to activate it from a place that's rooted in what's wisest within us, deepest places of origins within us. That's why they say it's the yoniso, they translate it as wisdom. So the idea that we can consider how we use attention, that we can have choice in using attention. We have choice of awakening attention, staying with attention, applying attention. Rather than, if we don't use that choice, then, you know, then our unconscious will kind of take us this way and that way, and we'll be preoccupied and lost, and advertisers will use it. You know, we'll grab it. And there, people get paid a lot of money to somehow capture your attention. And some people are very good at getting captured, you know, and off they go. So this yoniso manisikara is the conscious choice of using attention. And so that's one aspect, one element of attention. The second I want to talk about is called sampajana, which is clear, usually translated as clear comprehension, clear understanding. And that is that as we're paying attention, part of what can be possible in attention giving is to clearly understand what it is we're looking at, what it is we're aware of, perceiving. It's possible to go through life and hardly know what's there. You have enough, you can walk through the streets just enough so you don't bump into people. But it's something else to really clear, be present so you clearly understand what's happening. You clearly comprehend why you're there, what you're doing as you're walking, what's happening to you as you walk, what's going on with your environment around you, who the people are, what the traffic is doing. There's a clear comprehension, not lost. Attention's not lost in preoccupation. And clear comprehension is a knowing that recognizes or cognizes what we're aware of. So if I'm sitting meditating, I'm clearly aware that I'm sitting. And I watch some people when they meditate, and I wonder how aware they are that they're, you know, they're not really, they're kind of like, almost like their posture is almost like incidental. They just happen to be sitting in a way. They're trying to do some mental activity of meditating, but their body, they're not really aware of their body. And so their body is not attentive. It's not a field or an apparatus of attention because they're slumped too much. So clearly comprehend the body, what's happening here. To clearly comprehend the qualities and characteristics of breathing, if you focus on your breathing. To clearly comprehend that you're thinking, wow, my mind is out of control. My mind is spinning and thinking. There's a lot of energy around thinking right now. To kind of see it that with that kind of clarity is clear comprehension, and it allows something to happen. And that what happens is that the strength of attention starts to pull itself away from being absorbed in our preoccupation. So I can be lost in my thoughts, and it can be the gravitational force into my thoughts can be quite strong. But when we start practicing clear comprehension, it's like you step back and you look at it and say, that's what's going on. Like you're naming what's happening. And I've certainly been in meditation and kind of knew what was going on and kind of thought I was kind of trying to stay with my breathing or kind of thought I was kind of waking up, kind of. And I was kind of fooling myself. I was just kind of drifting and wandering in thoughts. But then at some point, kind of waking up enough and say, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then clearly comprehending, oh, this is a mind that is too complacent, drifting off and wandering off here and there. So to have this clear comprehension. So the Buddha talked about when you walk, have clear comprehension you're walking. When you're sitting, clear comprehension of sitting. Lying down, clear comprehension of it. And it's very simple, this idea of walking, sitting, laying down, standing. But to really know it changes the quality of our life. It's really something what can happen. To stand in a supermarket line and to really have clear comprehension you're standing there, clearly aware of what's happening there, tuning into your body, your thoughts, your breathing, all this stuff, it gives us access to something that's of a very nice quality that can be a better quality of living than just letting ourselves drift and not paying attention, kind of being there and mostly thinking about how could they buy the person in front of you in line, how could they buy so much pretzels? You know, what do they think they're doing? Is that really the best use of your time to be checking out what other people are buying and judging it? And in any case, they bought the pretzels that has too much salt. They shouldn't have done that. Is that really, you're clearly comprehending something, but in terms of this wise consideration, wise attention, is that the wisest place for your attention to be? Is that where you're going to really create the best conditions for your life and for yourself standing in line, is to be judging people's pretzels? It might be more interesting to have clear comprehension of the humanity of the person in front of you or the clerk you're going to see a few minutes from now or yourself, preparing yourself for when you meet that checkout clerk, that there's a half a chance you might say hello in a way that changes their day. How are you? To pay attention to yourself and, direct your attention to where it's useful. So this clear comprehension is a very important factor for what's called mindfulness practice. It's one of the key ways that mindfulness is cultivated. The other term that's important in the Buddha's teachings of attention is a word that can probably best be translated into English as experience or to feel, to experience something or feel something. To experience here doesn't mean like a big global experience, but kind of the felt sense, the way something is experienced in the moment through your skin, through the body, through your muscles, through the contact with things. So it's not knowing something, but rather feeling it. So you can know it's cold outside, but you can also feel the cold. You can experience the cold. You can know that a room is silent, but you can also kind of experience and feel the silence in a kind of perceptual way that's very different than knowing it. You could feel happy. You can know you're happy, but you can also feel what it's like to be happy. So the Buddha emphasized that sometimes what you want to do is you want to feel the experience. Part of the advantage of that is that feeling physically, the physical sensations of an experience, takes it out of the storyline that we're telling ourselves. And many of the complicated ways we live in the world is through the filter of stories, opinions, memories, projections, expectations, judgments, commentary that we have. And it makes life much more complicated and sometimes removes us from the richness of the direct experience. To experience it, to feel the felt sense of something, helps to quiet that story mind and brings us closer to this direct attention in the moment. It tends to cut through the preoccupations of the mind that we might have. So the Buddha also talked about the importance of feeling and sensing. And I would say that one of the big surprises for me in doing Buddhist practice was how much the emphasis was in practice on feeling the experience physically, the embodied experience. Almost like there's an embodied awareness that we can have. And to discover that embodied awareness, the radiance of that embodied awareness, adds to the richness of attention that we have, and that this capacity for attention. Sometimes in the wake of teaching people to feel their experience, the Buddha then added relaxing. Relax or calm or quiet down the physical apparatus. So if you feel that as you're feeling things and you feel there's tension, relax the tension. Both physical tension and also mental tension. So this idea that attention is connected, the quality of the attention is connected to the level of stress that we have. The more tension that we have, the quality of the attention decreases. The less tension we have, the more we can relax, the heightened the attention becomes, the richer it becomes, multidimensional becomes. It's just so much more interesting. Another term that was very important that's closely connected to the word clear comprehension is to understand. And the word understand is used not just to clearly see what's there, recognize what's there, but to kind of begin seeing the nature of things. So it's possible to know that, what would be an example? It's possible to know that you did something during the day that maybe hurt a friend of yours. You made a mistake. You said something that was maybe unkind. And so you clearly know that you're feeling sad. But to really understand the sadness deeply, to look at it and really understand it, is to understand that the sadness is a process. It's an unfolding over time. And so we use attention to support the sadness to evolve and to flow and to move. So we understand the nature of it, that it's a process. And then we make room for that process. And that's part of the value of attention. It's kind of like giving room for things to unwind, unfold, evolve, that they can't do if there's no room for it. So if we're preoccupied in our thoughts and there's very little attention, it's almost like there's no room for something to grow or develop or unwind or dissolve or whatever it needs to do. And so one of the reasons why we want to develop this strong capacity for awareness is so there's actually lots of room inside of us, in our hearts, in our minds, for things to kind of move through us in a healthy way and not get bottled up or get repressed or get somehow interrupted. So this understanding, to understand something about the nature of things, it was a big emphasis on the Buddha. Another way that he talked about attention, another element, was observation. And I love this idea of observation because when you the word to look, and he uses the word to look for this in Pali, to look, generally when we look at something, we don't interfere with it. You know, if you pick it up to handle and get to know it and touch it, you get your fingerprints all over it. But if you look at it, things just are left alone. And this ability to perceive what's there, just look at it without interfering with it, without trying to engineer it or make it better, make it go away, or to dissolve it, or judge it or have endless commentary, make stories about it. Just to observe is a powerful ability. It makes life a lot simpler. It gives us time to see clearly what's there, that we can take our time and then become wiser about what we're looking at. We can get to know it. So to train ourselves in Buddhism to have the capacity to have non-judgmental observation, non-interfering observation, to be able to have any experience at all, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, and have the ability to observe it without in the observation being for and against it. And so part of Buddhist, this attentional training in Buddhism is training in to observe without interfering, to step back and just observe, to look. So these are some of the primary things that are mentioned in Buddha about attention. But what I did hardly mention here was the word mindfulness. And the Pali word for mindfulness is sati. And it's never something the Buddha, it's never something the Buddha said they were supposed to do. We're supposed to do clear comprehension, do this wise consideration, do observation, do experiencing things, do relaxing. These are all the activities that the Buddha emphasized that you can do when you're developing your capacity for attention. But he never tells people to do mindfulness. And which is a little bit strange, since we have a whole industry now that tells us to be mindful. And but for this word sati that's translated as mindfulness, it's probably closer to the English word awareness. And the function of these other attentional elements, practices, is to help develop a strong presence of awareness. Awareness is not a singular thing, and different because maybe think of it as the composite or the coming together of all these different elements of attention that we have. But when they're all operating together, there can be something that we call being aware, being conscious. And that capacity, the gestalt, the whole field of perception, the whole field of awareness that we experience, can begin standing out in highlight and feel quite strong. And the Buddha referred to this as patisati, like patisati. And the word, the prefix pati is a reflexive prefix, meaning kind of reflecting back on itself. And one way of translating in English might be lucid awareness. And awareness is so lucid, so clear, that you clearly know you're aware. And this is where, when the awareness starts becoming stronger and stronger, these attentional factors begin to have power and strength in us, we're more and more present in the present moment. And the mind is not drifting off into the past, into the future, into thought. And the attention gets established here. It's a beautiful feeling. People who are meditators usually at some point learn to really love when the mind is settled in the present moment. And you don't feel like the mind wants to run off and go off to here and there and get involved in thoughts. I liken it to a marbles which have come to the bottom of a bowl and resting at the bottom of the bowl. And they're finally resting, they're finally there. And they're not going to go rolling up the sides anymore. But our minds have so much momentum in the marbles in our mind that they keep going up the sides, and then we come along and we push them, and so they keep we keep pushing them, and they don't ever have a chance to rest. Meditation is a way of resting all the loose marbles, and so they come and rest at the bottom of the bowl, skull, I guess, and it feels so good. And when it's really well established, that resting in the present moment, it just doesn't feel interesting for the mind to... You can feel like the mind's taking off. Nope. Come back. Stay here. It's so good. Sometimes it feels like it clicks in. Here. And in that time, it's when awareness, this lucid awareness, has a chance to become stronger and stronger. To support this process, the Buddha emphasized samadhi, concentration. And there was a number of mental factors that are part of this attentional apparatus that are more closely connected to concentration than they are to awareness itself. But they feed and they support each other as they go along. So the idea of steadying the mind, quieting the mind, focusing the mind, unifying the mind, is all part of this concentration factors. And as the mind gets unified and steadied and quiet, it becomes easier and easier to stay in the present moment, and this awareness becomes stronger and stronger. And as it becomes stronger, it's described as being a source of happiness. It's also described as becoming purified or clarified. The awareness becomes more and more pure. And at some point, it's purified by equanimity. There's a very, very strong feeling of equanimity, of balance, of non-reactivity in this state. The awareness is so strong and non-reactive, and it's pristine. It's just such a, it's like having a, you have really dirty windows on your car windshield, and you don't even notice it until someone cleans it and says, "Wow, it's clean. Wow, that's pretty cool." So the attentional apparatus inside, when there's no distractions and agitation and preoccupations of thoughts and all this stuff, and it gets quiet, then it gets, it's pretty beautiful. It's a beautiful sight. That's like looking like a great natural wonder to see the mind in this kind of purity. But the goal of this Buddhist practice is not just to have wonderful awareness, but rather to use that awareness for deeper and deeper insight, for wisdom. But to prepare it for for wisdom and insight, to really see deeply into our experience, so that some of our deepest attachments can let go, can release. It helps if the mind is softened enough from its contractions, its hardness, its stuckness. The mind, our mentality sometimes is so caught up in itself that it kind of gets stuck and hard, and the forces of attachment are kind of like locked in or frozen or something. And so part of the development of this attention, focus, steadied attention, is being developed. So, because simultaneously with developing this lucid awareness is a softening of the mind. The mind becomes more malleable, more at ease, more relaxed. And it's a relaxed, soft mind that it's easier to let go. But if we're still holding on tight, it's hard to let go. So the Buddha described this kind of mind this way, that's poised, ready to letting go. A mind that's purified, bright, unblemished, malleable, wieldy, steady, and imperturbable. Isn't that pretty cool description? So I don't know what you think of all this today. I didn't tell you. I wasn't expecting to give a very interesting talk. But what I've tried to do is to show you that there's all these different factors of attention, and that we can cultivate these factors, we can get interested in attention, and we can shift our attention, we shift our orientation from being preoccupied with all the details of life to being more oriented to the clarity of the awareness that knows those details. And we can be wise and choiceful about which of those details that awareness is focused on. And we kind of focus on those that lead us towards being kinder, softer, less attached, less preoccupied people. Rather than continuing to focus on those things that are support our addictions and our resentments and our, you know, ruminations that make us depressed. They say that one of the leading causes of depression is rumination. And probably because the subject of ruminations are so depressing. We're telling us the same thing over and over again. And so to be able to use our attentional capacity to redirect our thoughts, to redirect where our focus on, is a great gift. So what do you do with your attention? What do you know about your awareness? When you engage in being aware of the world around you, what forms of what elements of attention do you utilize? Is there any wisdom involved in choosing what you pay attention to, how you pay attention? Do you clearly comprehend what's happening in the moment? Do you observe it in a non-interfering way? Do you allow yourself to feel what's happening in a deep way? Do you allow yourself, as you feel aware, to relax in a deep way, to soften? So you can kind of enter into the experience and feel it more fully. Do you allow yourself to steady the mind, to quiet the mind? Do you allow yourself to be focused in a way that's comforting and nice, to just be here? Are there ways in which you can move your mind to really kind of come into the present moment so that awareness feels like a rich texture, or is valuable, or it's kind of like the best game in town? It's where the best quality of life is found, is in the clear present moment awareness. So what is your awareness like? And how do you use it? And how does it play out during your day? And how do you lose it? How do you bring it back? How do you, when it's here, what do you do with it? How much do you take it for granted? How much do you celebrate it and appreciate it? What is your whole relationship to awareness? And as you answer these questions for yourself and really get more and more curious, what is this thing called awareness and attention for you? Does it begin shifting your relationship to yourself, to the world around you, in any kind of perceptible way? What happens to you? So, I'll end with the idea that you've been given this truly amazing gift, the gift of awareness, gift of attention. Don't take it for granted. Let it become a source of inspiration and beauty and wisdom in your life. Your awareness is quite precious. Thank you.